Letter to Phyllis Boucher, March 2, 1975. 5:12. Dear Phyllis, I have long thought about you, wondering how you are, and my having just now written the short enclosed piece, which is about Tony, gives me pretext to write you as well as the opportunity to extend this copy of the piece so that you might read it. My love and memory of Tony are combined in this, although I must admit, in a rather odd way, the reason is that this was commissioned by the Sufi magazine The Real World, which is a very good magazine. It is put out by Tony Hiss, who writes The Talk of the Town in The New Yorker, and boasts such people as Robert Ornstein in its staff. It is what they call, ouch, a class magazine. The paper is high quality, too. I hope that you will like this piece. They may not. They just accepted a poem by my wife, Tessa, and they told me that they'd like to be able to get both of us together in an issue. So the heat is on me to come through. I've been working since 7:30 a.m. With deep personal regards, Philip K. Dick. Letter to Tony Hiss, March 2, 1975. Dear Tony, enclosed is the piece I've been working my ass off for The Real World. I'm glad you liked Tessa's poem, and that you say you are going to publish it in the next issue, but that sort of puts pressure on me to come through. I've been on this piece, like as of today, 7:30 a.m., at the typewriter. You asked for short. What is short? I kept it short. I hope short enough. I offer you two possibilities if you wish to cut it. One, just make cuts where you can or wish. I trust you, but I'll weep genuine tears because I kept it terse anyhow as it is. Two, okay, on my manuscript page 6, you could end the piece after line 10. Final printed sentence, that was my friend. But it's a different piece this way, with the Day of Wrath scene missing. Much limiteder, more milder. I proofed like mad on this, as you'll see, to cut down on your work. An author to editor grammar query, you'll note. With warm personal regards, Philip K. Dick. 5:14. When I met Theodore Sturgeon, who wrote More Than Human, this good man said to me right off, what sort of universe is it that causes a man like Tony Boucher to die of cancer? I had been wondering the same thing ever since Tony Boucher died. So had Ted Sturgeon, although he didn't expect me to give an answer. He just wanted to show me what he, Ted Sturgeon, was like. I found I can do that too. Let people know about me by asking that. It shows that I cared a lot about one of the warmest people who ever lived. Tony was warm, and at the same time, when he stood in the midst of a group of people, sweat came out on his forehead from fear. Nobody ever wrote that about him, but it's true. He was terrified all the time. He told me so once, not in so many words. He loved people, but one time I met him on the electric train going to the opera, and he was scared. He was a music critic, and he did reviewing for the New York Times and edited a magazine and wrote novels and stories. But he was scared to take a drive across town. Tony loved the universe, and the universe frightened him. And I think I know where his head was at. A lot of people who are timid are that way because they love too much. They're afraid it'll all fall through. Naturally, it did with Tony. He died in middle age. Now I ask you, what good did it do him to be scared? He used to carry his rare old 78 records to radio station KPFA every week, wrapping them up in a towel so they wouldn't get broken. One time I decided to give Tony all my rare opera and vocal records, just plain give them to him as a gift of my loving him. I phoned him up. I got Tiana Lemnitz records and Gerhard Husch, I told him. Tony replied shyly, they are my idols. He was a Roman Catholic, the only one we knew. and that was a strong statement. Before I could get the records to him, he was dead. "I feel tired half the day," he had added. "I can't work as much as I used to. I think I'm sick." I explained I had the same thing. That was 8 or so years ago. The doctor told him he had a bruised rib and taped it up. Someday I will meet that doctor on the street. Tony got bad advice from everyone who could talk. We used to play poker. Tony loved opera and poker and science fiction and mystery stories. He had a little writing class. This was after he was famous and edited fiction and science fiction. And he charged $1 a night when you showed up. He read your whole manuscript. He told you how rotten it was, and you went away and wrote something good. I never figured out how he accomplished that. Criticism like that is supposed to crush you. Maybe it's because when Tony reads your story, it's like he's reading it in Latin, somebody said. A whole dollar it cost. He taught me to write, and my first sale was to him. I can still remember that nobody understood the story but him, even after it was printed. Now it's in a college-level science fiction course manual put out by Ginn and Company. There's only about 300 words to the story. After the printing of the story, Ginn and Company prints an impromptu discussion I had with a high school class about the story. All the kids understand the story. It's about how a dog sees garbage men coming to steal the precious food that the family stores up every day until the heavily constructed repository is full. And then these rogues come and steal the food just when it's ripe and perfect. The dog tries to warn the family, but it's always early in the morning, and his barking just annoys them. The story ends when the family decides they have to get rid of the dog due to his barking, at which point one of the rogues or garbage men says to the dog, "We'll be back to get the people pretty soon." I never could understand why no one but Tony Boucher could understand the story. I sent it to him in 1951. I guess in those days my view of garbage men was not shared universally, and now in 1971, when the high school class discussed it with me, I guess it is. But garbage men don't eat people, a lady editor pointed out to me in 1952. I had trouble answering that. Something comes and eats up people who are sleeping in tranquility, like Tony. Something got him. I think the dog who cried, "Roog, roog," was trying to warn me and Tony. I got the warning and escaped, for a while anyhow. But Tony stayed at his post. You see, when you're so scared of the universe, or roogs, if you will, to stay at your post takes courage of the kind they can't write about because, one, they don't know how, and, two, they didn't notice in the first place. Except maybe Ted Sturgeon, with all his own love and his total lack of fear. He must have known how scared Tony was, and to be that scared, and for the rogues to get you, it's so symmetric, isn't it? However, Tony is still alive. I discovered last year. My cat had begun to behave in an odd way, keeping watch over me in a quiet fashion, and I saw that he had changed. This was after he ran away and came back, wild and dirty, crapping on the rug in fear. We took him to the vet, and the vet calmed him down and healed him. After that, Pinky had what I call a spiritual quality, except that he wouldn't eat meat. He would tremble whenever we tried to feed it to him. For 5 months, he'd been lost, living in the gutter, seeing God knows what. I wish I knew. Anyhow, when he was changed, in the twinkling of an eye, that is, while at the vet, he wouldn't ever do anything cruel. Yet I knew Pinky was afraid, because once I almost shut the refrigerator door on him, and he did a 3-cushion bank shot of himself off the walls to escape, and clocked a velocity unusual for a pink sheep thing that usually just sat and gazed ahead. Pinky had trouble breathing because of his heavy fur and what they call hairballs. Tony had asthma terribly and needed it cold. Pinky would sit by the door to get the cold air from under the crack and struggle to breathe. I will not write a teaser article here. Pinky died of cancer suddenly. He was 3 years old, very young for a cat. It was totally unexpected. The vet diagnosed it as something else. I hadn't realized Pinky was Tony Boucher, served up by the universe again, until I had this dream about Tony the Tiger, the cereal box character who offers you Cocoa Puffs. In my dream, I stood at one end of a light-struck glade, and at the other, a great tiger came out slowly with delight, and I knew we were together again, Tony the Tiger and me. My joy was unbounded. When I woke up, I tried to think who I knew named Tony. I had other strange experiences after Pinky died. I dreamed about a Mrs. Donlevy, who was incredibly tall. I could see only her feet and ankles. And she was serving me a plate of milk on the back porch. And there was a vacant lot where I could roam at will forever. It was the Elysian vacant lot, which the Greeks believed in, but just my size. Also, the day Pinky died at the vet's, that evening as I stood in the bathroom, I felt my wife put her hand on my shoulder firmly to console me. Turning, I saw no one. I also dreamed this dream. I had the album notes for Don Pasquale, and at the end, the conductor had added a note, 5 strings of catgut, like a stave. It was a final hello from Pinky, who was Tony Boucher. In the drama, the album was an old 78 one, a favorite of Tony's. Tony, or Pinky, I guess names don't count, was a lousy hunter all his life. One time, he caught a gopher and came up our apartment stairs with it. He put it on his dish, where he was fed, and the gopher ran off. Tony felt that things belonged in their place. An obsessively orderly person, his books were arranged the same way, each book in its exact place. He should have tolerated more chaos in the universe. However, he re-caught the gopher and ate it. Tony, or Pinky, was my guide. He taught me to write. And he stayed with me when I was sick back in 1972 and 1973. That's why my wife Tessa brought him over, because I had pneumonia and needed help, and we had no money for a doctor. I think now, in that regard, I was lucky. He would have told me I had a bruised rib. Pinky used to lie on my body in a transversal fashion, which mystified me until I realized that he was trying to figure out which part of me was sick. He knew it was just one part, around the middle of my body. He did his best, and I recovered, but he did not. That was my friend. Most cats fear the clattering arrival of the garbage men each week, but Pinky really more detested them than feared them. He hid out under our bed about a half an hour before we heard them coming every Monday. He didn't show fear. We just saw the 2 unwinking green eyes under the bed where he waited the garbage men out. There was no Pinky, just the eyes, waiting them out, the bastards. 4 nights before Pinky died, before we knew he had cancer, I started to say, before he had been diagnosed as having a bruised rib, he and Tessa and I were lying in the bedroom on the bed, and I saw a uniform pale light slowly fill the room. I thought the angel of death had come for me, and I began to pray in Latin, Tremens factos sum ego et timeo, and so forth. Note. Latin. I am seized with fear and trembling, until the trial is at hand, and the wrath to come, when the heavens and earth shall be shaken. From the Libera Me of the Requiem Mass of the Roman Catholic Church. End note. Tessa gritted her teeth, but Pinky sat there, front feet tucked under him, impassive. I knew there was no place to hide, like under the bed. Death can find you under the bed, everyone knows that, even little kids. And it looks bad. It never occurred to me that death was coming for anyone but me, which shows my attitude. I saw us all as painted ducks on a painted sea, and thought of the Arab 13th century poem about once he will miss, twice he will miss, all the world's one level plain for him, on which he hunts for flowers. We were as conspicuous as, well, anyhow, finally I gave up praying. But I remember in particular I kept crying out, Mors stupebit et natura. Note. Latin. Death and nature will marvel. From the Dies Irae of the Requiem Mass. End note. Which I thought meant that death stood stupefied, as if in surprise, as in, I was stupefied to learn that my car had been towed away. It means just standing there, impotently. That is not what Merriam-Webster 3 says, but it is what I say. Pinky never noticed the pale light. He seemed awake but dozing. I think he was humming to himself. Later, when I slept, toward morning, I dreamed a disturbing dream. The report of a gun being fired close to my ear, a shotgun blast. And when I looked, I saw a woman lying dying. I went for aid, but got onto some kind of one of those electric trolley buses by mistake, along with 3 Gestapo agents. I dreamed that a lot. We rode around forever, while I tried vainly to short-circuit the power cables of the bus or trolley car, whatever it was, without avail. The Gestapo agents seemed confident and read newspapers and smoked. They knew they had me.